Welcome to InfoNation, UIC's very own podcast created by the students for the students. At InfoNation, we discover how media, information, and communication are created, governed, and used. Produced by upper-level students in the Department of Communication, InfoNation brings academic research to help make sense of our increasingly mediated society. At InfoNation, we go to the library so you don't have to. Welcome. We have something amazing planned for you today. My name is Kristen, and I'm here today with Araceli and Katie. In today's episode, we will be discussing privacy and trust in our government and private corporations in regards to the internet and personal data. Our special guest is Robert Sloan, professor and department head of computer science at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He recently published a book with Richard Warner titled Unauthorized Access, The Crisis in Online Privacy and Security. There will be more about this later in the segment. We'd like to begin this episode with a recent story which has made headlines. Apple's very own Tim Cook released a letter on February 16th informing consumers that the FBI has requested Apple to build a new key code which can possibly unlock any iPhone in the world. An easy but often difficult question to ask is, what does this mean for you? Well, for us, it means that the US government is once again stepping over the line between privacy and national security while using a major company to do so. With this in mind, we are wondering, how is it that Americans can still trust government agencies and private companies such as Apple, Facebook, and Google with their personal information? Do people even trust their data is protected, or are they forced to give up their data in order to reap the benefits of new technological inventions? Are the government and private companies there to protect us, or to try and control us and make a profit? In the modern world, can we really trust anyone to protect us? These are important questions that we should be asking ourselves every time prior to sharing any personal information through our cell phones, computers, apps, and social media. Let's keep these questions in mind while we define what we mean by privacy and trust in relation to private companies and government. We think that it is important that we all agree on exactly what we are discussing. Author Zulei Tang and other scholars discuss the definitions of privacy and trust in their article Gaining Trust Through Online Privacy Protection, Self-Regulation, Mandatory Standards, or Caveat Emptor. In their article, they define privacy as the ability to control the acquisition and use of information about oneself, and then define trust as the willingness of one party to be subject to the risks brought by another party's actions. By trusting one party, we believe that the other party will not commit any actions which may harm the reputation or well-being of an individual by using any disclosed and personal information. Furthermore, trust involves people knowing how exactly their information is being used at all times. Given these definitions, we can begin to think about how our government agencies have handled our personal information in the past, and we can begin asking if we can trust them. For those of you not familiar with Edward Snowden, he is a former CIA employee who revealed thousands of national classified documents to journalists about several secret NSA global surveillance programs. According to Matthias Scholz, Snowden disclosed information about programs such as PRISM, Tempor, or X-KeyScore, which can collect information from our emails, listen to our phone calls, and see any kind of internet activity. Katie, Araceli, and I don't think there is a good enough reason for government agencies to have that much power over people. This sort of government power strips us of our privacy without giving us the option to voice our opinion. Of course, this is not to say that these specific programs cannot help prevent acts of terrorism. Sure, they can. However, that is at the expense of government legitimacy, which within itself causes deep trust issues in society. Finding out that we have been spied on for years certainly does not give us reasonable proof to believe that government agencies are being honest about what our information is being used for. To take this a step further, let's forget about national security and trust and simply think about privacy. Privacy of the NSA versus privacy of each individual in America. The NSA invaded our privacy by secretly spying on us and acted as if it's not problematic. But when Snowden invaded their privacy, they sought a legal remedy. Yes, 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 I know what you're thinking. They should just say forget about national security. Yes, I did. Because we think that the national security that our government is defending may as well be a tyranny. An oppressive Big Brother society where they know everything and control everything. This puts us in a situation where it's us versus them. Corporations, companies, government agencies, social media versus the people. The 1% versus 99%. The rich versus the poor. Us versus them. We are firm believers that the government was put in place to protect us, not work against us. Although the right of privacy is not directly mentioned in the Constitution, the Supreme Court has said that several amendments create privacy. Of course, some will argue that spying on us by the government is protecting us. However, we do not believe manipulation to be an effective technique of protection, as giving someone power to hold over us and trusting them not to use it creates a society of fear. Coming back to the story with Apple, once again the government is asking to inflict our privacy. This time Apple seems to be on our side, although we think that they have to draw a line in their relations with the government or they will lose their consumers. And after all, sellers are nothing without the buyers. Of course, we're not here to tell you what to think. We are just bringing up some questions to think about. Now let's turn to Araceli for more information about private companies' usage of our personal data.
Well, Kristen, it is interesting you bring that up because it seems that by actively engaging with others online, we are unwittingly contributing to our data collection. Through our constant use of social media sites and mobile applications, we are putting a lot of our personal information at risk. We are not always aware that by consenting to the terms and conditions, we are allowing third parties and advertisers to obtain our information. According to the 2014 research conducted by Nancy Peterson, even after Snowden exposed the NSA's access to our metadata, we, the users, seem to not understand the way in which companies such as AT&T, Verizon, Facebook, and Google can use and share our personal information. A 2014 Pew Research study showed that 68% of adults were not confident that social media sites would keep their personal information private and secure. And honestly, judging from what we have heard about these companies, we don't blame them. In a report conducted by Privacy International, Facebook was charged with severe privacy flaws. Facebook's data mining policy, which claimed to reinforce the company's ability to collect information about its users through other sources, was probably one of the reasons for such low rating. Since Facebook has altered their data policy by giving us the opportunity to control the information about us that is being shared with apps and websites. However, Facebook's data policy isn't all peaches and cream. Moreover, their policy also states that they may share information internally within their sister companies and third parties. According to the documentary, Terms and Conditions May Apply, when we accept the terms and conditions, we 1. Authorize companies to use our personal data, 2. We acknowledge that the terms can be altered at any time, and 3. We agree to have our information shared with third parties. To further explain the issue, let's talk to privacy expert Robert Sloan to see what he has to say.
Good afternoon and welcome to InfoNation. Thank you for joining us today. Can you please start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
I'm Professor Robert Sloan, for UIC purposes, Professor Sloan. I am a professor of computer science. I'm also the department head for computer science.
Fantastic. So we know that you focus on many topics and are well-versed in many computer science issues and policies, but today we would primarily like to focus on your work on privacy and security on the internet. So just to get started, if you could tell us a little about the book you published with Richard Warner in 2013, titled Unauthorized Access, The Crisis in Online Privacy and Security.
That book, perhaps unfortunately, focused entirely on corporate surveillance of our online behavior, targeted advertising and the like. The book released in late summer of 2013 after the Snowden revelations, which we didn't talk about at all for two reasons. First of all, we didn't know about it at the time we finished the book. Second of all, there's been a lot of interest in the subject of government surveillance dating back a very long time. And there was somewhat less interest and less written about what the private sector was doing.
So our podcast focuses on the government and private corporations and the trust we place into both of them as far as collecting our data. We began our podcast by discussing the Apple versus the FBI issue and the creating of a backdoor key to unlock the iPhone. And we wanted to get your opinion on the matter.
As you probably know, it's come out in just the past few days that they apparently hired a hacker for about, I think the number is $1.3 million. Overwhelmingly, the case was not about constitutional law, not about the usual issues of the Fourth Amendment search and seizure that people think of in such cases, because the phone was owned not by the deceased terrorist, but by the county, which was his employer. Dead people have relatively few privacy rights, and in any event, the owner of the phone was all in favor. The brouhaha was all over the correct interpretation of the All Writs Act, and says that companies and individuals have to assist judicial inquiries by agreeing with writs, and then the question is, how much do they have to cooperate?
Do you think it's more of an issue of privacy or security, or do you think privacy and security go hand in hand?
The question is, whose privacy and whose security? This was a security issue. The government's claim that none of us will be secure unless the government can compel access to electronic communication. The reason why I was opposed to government being able to compel Apple to create a way in is because there are no way in only for good government agents that can't be used by other parties.
Do you think creating a backdoor key to unlock the iPhone can relate to Snowden revelations in the sense that it would give the government an extra way to spy on the citizens?
Yes. Not necessarily very tightly, but broadly, there's been tension going on around encryption dating back to the Bill Clinton administration. The government has always wanted to access any and all mass communication.
Based on all of the research we have done, we have come to the conclusion that private companies and the government go hand in hand. Therefore, sharing information with either can be tricky. What are your thoughts on that?
In general, that is exactly right. They can absolutely, just like a future employer or a credit card company, purchase a pretty detailed profile of you from various credit and information bureaus. By and large, what goes to private companies goes to the U.S. government. Apple is something of an exception, not in that they are any more or less likely to share than Facebook or Google, but that the way Apple makes its money is different from Facebook or Google. You know, I don't think they are more moral or more noble. I think everyone's profit-driven. And advertising is a big part of the revenue model for most of the giants of the internet economy. And they make at least a little bit more by targeted advertising, so that you have an incentive to develop a lot of information about you. Apple's huge money makers are hardware, especially the iPhone and the iPad. You know, the Mac is now a sideline for them. But because they're in the hardware business primarily, they're not collecting much information about us, and it allows them to be the privacy advocates, darlings.
Do you think that this is problematic, that our information is very accessible for anyone to find exactly what they want about us? And do you think people should fear that?
I do think it's problematic. Lowest utilitarian level, I would say we are getting a mildly bad deal from Facebook or Google. You know, very powerful, compelling services. You guys are both on Facebook and spend a fair amount of time there, I imagine. The great deal of profit that they generate from our information, this is a mildly bad deal, that the business could be rearranged so they would have mildly less information about us, maybe more than mildly less, still make a very good profit. A better deal would be to instead give us some of the privacy we used to have, and then a little less profit.
I just want to switch gears for a minute. So we touched on Facebook a little bit, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about privacy policies, if you could explain what a privacy policy is and how it works, and then go a little bit into informed consent.
A privacy policy, in the sense you mean it, is some written declaration by entity like Facebook or any online company or offline financial or medical company you deal with that says, with your information, we'll do A and B and C, and we will not do D and E and F. Nobody reads them. They are not readable. Technically, they are part of a contract. My usual collaborator on these things, Richard Warner, is a professor of law, also a specialist in contract law, and he doesn't read these things. So nobody reads on them. The notion of informed consent, or we are given this information in a form that we can digest, think about, and then make a choice. In point of fact, it's given to us in a form that we can't digest it at all, and there's really no choice. So, you know, your choice is either you click I agree or you don't use Facebook, and you know, for a middle-aged professor, it may be an option to not use Facebook, but for most people between the ages of 15 and 30, if not 15 and 40, that's not an option. So there is, so this notice and choice notion of informed consent is broken. It's not working.
What do you think are the biggest privacy issues we have today, and what can the general public do to protect themselves?
Stay alert to phishing schemes, practice reasonable, pervasive government security. We do know one way or another, and the details have changed recently, but the U.S. government is maintaining access to every phone call you've made or has been made to you, not the contents, but time and who you call. And that's extremely revealing. And there it's what the general public can do is make political demands for change and resist when you hear in response to them, as you will, that, you know, if you do that, the terrorists will win, and ISIS will be gunning down people at UIC during finals week. And third is the detailed profiles of us that any number of private behemoths are building and are permitted by U.S. law to build. And again, you can't really go live in a cave, and you can't even really live without Facebook. Again, it's a matter of demanding political change.
Okay, great. We would like to thank you for being a part of our podcast today, Professor.
So why does this all matter? Why should you be concerned about who we trust and how our data is being shared? According to Neil Crockett, CEO of Digital Catapult Center in the UK, he believes that data sharing is crucial for advancement in a digital society. He believes distrust can put a halt on data being shared and thus hinder us from reaching the full potential of sharing data. So what issues still remain? And who is responsible for building the trust of the people? We believe that everyone is responsible in building trust, from the government to private corporations to academic centers of research, which we are seeing pop up all over the United Kingdom, and even the people themselves are responsible for educating themselves. We believe there is still a long way to go in understanding exactly what personal data is and who is responsible for protecting it. But hopefully with podcasts like these, we can get the word out and start educating the public. Although there is no fail-safe plan to keep your information private or from getting into the wrong hands, there are actions you can take right now that will make a difference. Education on digital privacy and building trust is everyone's responsibility. One thing you can do now is register to vote and pay attention to the different political platforms on online privacy. Your vote will make a huge difference as to what will happen with the government and how they deal with privacy issues. If you are interested in how you can get more actively involved, we suggest visiting EPIC.org. EPIC is the Electronic Privacy Information Center. It is a not-for-profit organization that is doing really great work to educate the people of the United States. They are involved in Data Protection 2016, which is a nonpartisan campaign trying to make data protection a campaign issue. Well, that's all the time we have today. We would like to give credit to Maximilian for the sound clip we used throughout the podcast titled News Intro, which can be found on soundbible.com. Special thanks to our interviewee, Professor Robert Sloan, and of course my co-hosts, Araceli and Kristen. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to InfoNation, coming to you from University of Illinois at Chicago Department of Communication. Our theme music today was created by Sean Rizvi, a 2015 graduate. We hope we piqued your interest and you learned something new today. Please feel free to engage by rating, commenting, or sharing our episodes.